You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Big thanks to, again, political editor, my colleague here at Civic Media, Dan Schaefer, of course, founder of Urban Milwaukee, Jeremy Janine, and ahead of time, a big thanks to my very next guest, Jason Stein. He's the executive director of the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Are you, Jason, I get this wrong every time you come on. Are you the ED or are you the president? With you and Rob's positions moving around, I seem to always get this wrong.
I am the president, but just as long as I'm not late for dinner, it's fine.
This is, I have been saying that for a long time. My full name, Margaret. People are, do you prefer Margaret, matey? I do not care as long as I'm not late for dinner. So we have that in common, my friend. You're certainly not late for this conversation about these local referenda that appeared across the state on many ballots on April 1st. Let's start with the schools referenda, because as we are all looking to the federal government and the Trump administration and this very explicit plan to dismantle the Department of Education, which is going to put funding coming through various federal departments, it would, by any account, make it much more complicated for local school districts to get funding, makes what occurred on April 1st all the more crucially, potentially existentially important for many school districts. Tell us what we're seeing, like just trend-wise across the state over the last few years when it comes to school funding referenda, and then what happened this past April 1st.
Absolutely. So if you look at the votes that took place in the February primary and the April 1st general election, school referenda, there were 94 of these ballot questions out there for voters, and 53 of them passed. So that is about 56% approval rate. That is a little bit lower than in some recent years. At the same time, even though the approval rates for school referenda have dropped a little bit, the overall number of these ballot questions that are going to voters is at the largest it's ever been. And so there are more in even numbered years when there's either a gubernatorial or a presidential election on the ballot. But for an odd numbered year, this was where you just have a spring election, this was a large number, and a number of them passed. We're seeing more of them be for districts' day-to-day operating budget, as opposed to for capital projects like renovating or building a school. And the other thing we're seeing is that this year, we found that 36 of the referenda, or more than a third, were what you could call retries of a previously failed referendum. And of those retries, 17, or just under half, were successful. So we're finding that, and you know, maybe this is a sign of the increasing pressure that districts feel, that you know, in the past, if you had a district go to referendum and fail, that tended to be the end of it. Now, increasingly, we're seeing more districts put those questions back to voters in some form or another, even if it's somewhat modified, and more districts come to terms with voters in that now if a district chooses to go back to retry, more often than not, eventually the retry is succeeding, whether or not if it's on the first try or the second try, what have you. So, you know, that's kind of a new phenomenon that we're seeing, and we're still wrapping our arms around what it means.
Well, there's two things that you said there, Jason, that I want our listeners to cue in on, because they are in combination. I think a harbinger of the fact that we've entered into this sort of like new era of school funding referenda, which are these two facts. One, more and more school funding referenda are for operating budgets versus capital expenditures. If you're not an accounting dork, don't worry. Jason and I are. A capital expenditure is infrastructure. It's your building, that kind of stuff that are infrequent but very expensive. If you can think about that, folks, that makes sense. Okay, you'd have this referendum. Maybe it's not a permanent increase in property tax. It's for this one particular purpose. It's to avoid having to borrow and have debt that you then have to finance over a long term for very expensive capital projects to build your new school, right? When referenda are funding operating budgets, that is the everyday expenses, the books, right, the salaries, the payroll, the busing costs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's thing one. Now referenda are going towards operating budgets, which right, shows you, oh my goodness, school districts are really in a pinch if they have to have these referenda just to fund operating budgets. The second thing that you mentioned is that they have to come back again and again and again. Those two things right, aren't just independent. They're related. If you have to go to a referenda to fund your basic school district operations and voters say no, guess what? You're going to come back because you need the money to fund your basic operating expenses. Is it fair to say, Jason, that we are indeed in this new era of school funding referenda, where you're, whether you're urban or rural, north, south, east, or west, that these are just much more frequent and larger in scale and much more existential to the existence of some of these school districts and their relative success?
Yes. I mean, now we're in a world where more districts have passed a referenda, let's say, within the past 4 or 5 years that have not. So it is becoming a very common feature. And, you know, the operating referenda also have two kinds. One is a permanent, right, they call it a recurring referendum. Another is just a temporary, or they call it non-recurring. Typically, those will be for something like 4 years. And so that's one reason that you see many of these come back and come back, because if a district does something for 4 years, then often when that 4 year period is up, they're once again in the position of either having to make substantial cuts or go to referendum again. So that's another reason why you see these things come back. And it can even happen with permanent referenda as well, where even after that fully phases in over 4 years, then the district is going back for another round of permanent referenda, as you said, as we've seen in both Madison and Milwaukee.
And Arrowhead, another school district, took a second bite at the apple this April 1st. That referenda didn't pass. They're not really sure what they're going to do about it. But overall, Jason, it continues to be the trend in Wisconsin that school funding referenda, the majority of them pass. People feel a pretty strong commitment to educating their kids. Wisconsin's always been a state that has prioritized education, at least in what we say, maybe not in always how we budget. But when we turn to municipal funding referendum, which are coming up with greater frequency now on our ballots, those are a little bit different. Tell us what they're generally for and how do those fare and how did they fare this past April 1st?
Sure. They typically are for operations. I mean, they can do, you know, the Village of Cottage Grove, for example, in Dane County had a referendum, I believe, to both build and operate a library. But typically, you'll see more of these in recent years for operations, and you're seeing increasingly some larger communities do it. So in November of 2024, City of Madison and several other Madison suburbs passed referenda. The City of Racine here now in April passed a pretty substantial referendum for emergency medical services. A lot of these municipal referendum tend to be for public safety services of some kind, whether it's law enforcement or fire or EMS. But, you know, you also see some being done for just sustaining general operations of the local government. There were 14 in February and April this year, and of those, six passed. So the majority failed. It's typical that municipal referenda do not get put to ballots in the same numbers as schools, and they tend to pass at lower rates.
Here's what I want people to think about a bit. When you do see municipal referenda, as Jason just explained, it is often, most frequently, tied to public safety. If you ask yourself why, this makes sense. Most people will say, we support our police. That I'm just speaking in great generalities, that we support our firefighters and first responders. We understand their essentialness. Those also are often in municipal budgets some of the single largest chunks of expenditures, whether it's healthcare, their pension costs. So while it is easy to say, I support the police and fire in my community, it is harder to fund the full panoply of benefits and pension and health included. They have earlier retirements, as well as just the infrastructural, the engine costs, the firehouses, the district stations. So again, you're seeing these sorts of local funding. These are tax increases on the ballot for things that are generally popular, right? Otherwise, these would never, ever pass. So again, tied a lot of the times to law enforcement. And of course, we've been talking about school referendum. With the time we've got left, Jason, here's my real big picture question. Some economists are predicting recession. When growth slows, there are less tax receipts, less tax revenues. What can we expect if state tax revenues are down overall due to the Trump tanking of our economy, at least those words, not Jason's, and when we see local governments and local school districts struggling to make ends meet, as well as I'll throw in their potential funding cuts, et cetera, from the feds as well?
Sure, absolutely. So one, in Wisconsin, we are heavily reliant on the property tax to fund local government and just the overall state and local services. That does make us a little bit more reliable and stable in the event of recession. But, you know, there can still be impacts to local government from decreased state aid if you see, you know, drops in corporate income, sales, and income tax.
Folks, that's Jason Stein. He is the president of the Wisconsin Policy Forum, joins us to make each and every one of us smarter. Thanks to Jason. When we come back, I'm going to dig into the major Supreme Court decisions that have dropped over the last 18-24 hours, what they might mean for your civil rights. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Listen, if you like to watch as well as listen, you can do so. Civic Media's got our own YouTube channel. Just search on YouTube for Civic Media. You can watch me there. You can also watch me on Insta, the thing that used to be called Twitter, and the Book of Faces. My handle is at Maggie Dawn Show, and you can watch us there. Hello to the few hundred people we've got online watching. Great to see you all. Feel free to make comments online if you're, again, on YouTube, Facebook, X, Insta, or Facebook. You can put comments up there. We will see them. We will share them as we can here on the radio. You can also, of course, do it the old-fashioned way with your phone, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. If you are a longtime Civic Media Talk Radio Network listener, did you know that Civic Media also has a fabulous music station lineup when you're running errands, getting your exercise in, and you've just had enough politics for the day? I can't imagine that that would ever be the case. Check out Civic Media's fabulous music lineup. We've got 98Q Country in Park Falls, Also on 105.5 WIRI in Wisconsin Rapids, WRCO in Richland Center. All are free on the Civic Media app, so go get that. You can also use the app to join our conversation with just one click. You can call or text us, again, 855-752-4842. Before I brought on this incredible set of guests that we've had today, Dan Schaefer, Jeremy Janine, and of course, Jason Stein. Thank you to Jason from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. I had a fabulous question from one of you, our great listeners. And the question was this. Amanda from Cross Plains, listening on WMDX, said this to me via our text line. Maggie, do you and your Civic Media peers have thoughts on the predictions circulating online about Donald Trump declaring martial law on April 20th? I'm going to start there because this all relates up. These two court decisions, they're largely interim decisions from the Supreme Court over the last 24 hours, I think are giving us some breadcrumbs as to how the Supreme Court may view invocation of martial law. And I'll get to that as we go through my discussion of those cases. But I wanted to just zoom way back out for a second. I talked about this a little bit yesterday on the show, and I think I rushed through it a little bit. So I want to say this more slowly to all of you and get your feedback. What we have seen since Donald Trump took office on January 20th is a dismantling of, well, everything. Without exception, nothing is sacred. The VA, yep, let's slash that to the tune of 82,000 jobs. Who cares if it's legal? Let's declare birthright citizenship not a thing, even though it's in the Constitution. Let's gut the CDC, even though we are guaranteed to see another global pandemic like COVID. Let's put, right, the vaccine denier, RFK, in charge of the CDC. Let's propose cuts to Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. Let's stop asking billionaires and corporations to pay their fair share, and let's, in fact, give them more handouts in the form of tax cuts that they neither need, but certainly want, but neither need nor would put to use in our economy. Let's abandon the idea that economies that are integrated globally, when one economy grows, it also grows the other economies, and that trade wars and escalating industry protectionary measures actually are bad for the middle class. You want to know why we have a trade deficit? Because it's cheaper to make stuff abroad than it is here. There is no sacred cow in a Donald Trump administration. None. It's not the Constitution. It's not conservative principles. He's abandoned Ukraine, abandoned our NATO allies, threatened to basically unwind NATO, hates the United Nations. No sacred cow there. The globalism that conservatives for the last 50 years bear hugged as the engine of capitalism. Not a sacred cow. Nope, that's gone. What hasn't he tried to dismantle, to blow up? What isn't in chaos right now? I mean, somebody tell me something that's not completely sort of mind-bogglingly chaotic right now. Calls for the impeachment of judges, picks a billionaire overlord and a bunch of barely post-pubescent, pimply-faced techno-geeks to decide what works and doesn't in our federal government. Institutions of higher learning. Nope, we'll extort those too. The world's largest, most powerful law firms. We'll attack those as well. There's no sacred cow in the Donald Trump administration. I told you yesterday, there's only two things that explain all of this together. And those two things are, none of this makes sense except for these two things. If you agree that these are the motivating factors, then it all makes sense. It will enrich billionaires in the United States. And it will empower Donald Trump. Those are the only explanatory variables that work. And so in the face of ever accelerating chaos, what might a wannabe tin pot dictator want to declare? People protesting in the streets? Upset from coast to coast? An invasion from our southern border? I know! Martial law. The date is April 20th because Donald Trump gave Pete Hegseth and the other Mensa members 90 days to figure it out. So yeah, do I think it's a possibility? I sure do. When we come back, I'm going to dig into these cases, share with you my analysis of why this matters to each and every one of us as the Supreme Court emboldens the cruel chaos of Donald Trump when we come back right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Everybody, my name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. One of the things that I haven't talked about on this show very intentionally are Donald Trump's repeated statements that sure he'd be open to a third term. Because the Constitution very clearly prohibits it. However, it is becoming more and more concerning to me that our Article III courts, our federal courts, are so weakened, except for the Supreme Court, which has usurped power and authority from Congress over the last 25 years, that it has become the most powerful Supreme Court in our nation's history, vastly exceeding all of the powers that our founding fathers ever thought the court would seize for itself. But that the court system and the trial and appeals courts are so weak, are so slow to respond, are such an inadequate remedy that the just flood, the fire hose of unconstitutional lawlessness from the Trump administration, it is not being curbed quickly enough. And what occurred in the last 24 hours from the Supreme Court of the United States makes me all the more concerned. So when we start talking about things like the Insurrection Act, which, by the way, there isn't actually an act. It's a collection of laws that's generically referred to as the Insurrection Act. And the Insurrection Act, as it's generically referred to, is basically supposed to define the circumstances under which a president can deploy the military under his arguably sole control to basically quell domestic disturbances. It's the idea of ordering the military to what? Engage, fire upon, put down American civilians on civilian on American soil. So I'm getting increasingly worried about these things because the courts are so slow. And when they do finally act and they put a time deadline that applies pressure or should apply pressure to the Trump administration, the Supreme Court is saying, well, you know, maybe you should have done it this other way. There's probably a claim here, but you need to cite this other set of statutory and constitutional principles to bring that before us. You should go back and try it again. It's happening a lot from the Supreme Court. We should be concerned. Not freaking out, but we should be concerned. Watch this space. These are no longer rhetorical and hypothetical arguments by legal eagles like myself. These are very real threats. My 80-year-old plus parents were at the hands-off protest in Tucson. I met an 80-year-old guy at the Milwaukee protest. He said, I did this in the 60s. Why am I here again? Can you imagine what happens when a soldier confronts my mom who uses a cane? So let me explain what has gone on from the Supreme Court in the last 24 hours. There were a pair of cases. They're both related. One is specific. One is general. I'm going to start with the general one first. This is the case where the Trump administration's invocation of the Alien Enemies Act is being challenged in court as not constitutional. And even if you can invoke the Alien Enemies Act, even though we're not at war or at any declared war, and it's only been used when we've actually been in a war before, even if you can do that, people still deserve due process. And so, you know, disappearing people to one of the most brutal, inhuman prisons on planet Earth without a court hearing, probably not legal. And again, just a reminder, the Alien Enemies Act is a 1798 law that's only been invoked three times during the War of 1812, World War I, and World War II. Do we have a congressional declaration of war? No, no, we don't. Never in the history of our country has an immigration alleged problem, let's just call it a problem, been the basis for invoking this federal law. And the breadth and the power that the president has under this federal law is breathtaking in scope, not unlike the Insurrection Act. Like the Insurrection Act, the Alien Enemies Act also lacks really precise definitional preconditions to a president's invocation of same. What's a layperson way of saying that, Maggie? It ain't clear when those things can be invoked by a president. Like, what? When can I use the Alien Enemies Act? It doesn't really say clearly. The Insurrection Act or the compositive U.S. code that people generally refer to as the Insurrection Act, it isn't clear. So when you have a lawless, corrupt president that wants to suck money out of your pocket to enrich him and his billionaire bro buddies, and is willing to plunge the entire planet Earth into economic chaos, leading to mass protests, while disappearing people he alleges without any due process of law to be enemies of the state. Where does this end? Well, the Supreme Court's really worried about, you know, making sure that you exactly do it the right way and not this way, but this other way, even though maybe that other way. That's what happened yesterday. So, without being too glib, and then I'm going to get to your calls, 855-752-4842, by a 5-4 majority of the Supreme Court, with Justice Amy Coney Barrett joining these three liberals on the court in dissent, the Supreme Court vacated two temporary restraining orders, one that barred the government from using the Alien Enemies Act to remove specific plaintiffs, and a second to prevent the government from using it on anyone, right? So it was kind of like a class action and a specific application in this one case. And the judge there had reasoned his way to that outcome using a thing called the Administrative Procedure Act. And this court in its infinite, nonpartisan, pro-rule of law, pro-constitution. Of course, we don't have kings here. No man is above the law. Oh, wait. Yeah, that's not our Supreme Court. And their infinite wisdom said that that's not the right way to do this, that you need to file basically individual petitions for habeas corpus. What is habeas corpus? That's fancy legal terms that talks about actual custody and control of someone by the government. And you're petitioning to have the government release you from said control on various legal bases, habeas corpus. Now, in general, what happens when you have to bring an individual habeas corpus claim is that you have to bring it where you are being kept, which means that the vast majority of these cases challenging the invocation of the Alien Enemies Act to disappear people without due process in the middle of the night are going to have to proceed in the Fifth Circuit of the United States, the most right circuit appeals court in the United States. It also means that it will be harder to seek systemic relief on behalf of a group of persons. Habeas claims generally have to be made individually and with specific allegation of facts. So do you see where I'm going here? The Supreme Court, these five men in the pocket of billionaires like Donald Trump and Elon Musk, riddled by credible allegations of corruption and lack of objectivity. Samuel Alito, Clarence Thomas, I am looking at you. These guys just made it so much harder for human beings standing on American soil to access one of the most fundamental rights that protects the individual from the tyranny of the state, and that is due process, the right to a fair hearing. No matter what you may think about immigrants or alleged gang members, the thing that differentiates a democracy from tyranny is the individual's right to be heard in a court of law by an independent arbiter and to say, I will have my rights vindicated and heard and decided, especially when it comes to your individual rights and freedoms that the state, that a government seeks to take away. And what do we see in the companion case of the individual, the man from Maryland, whom a federal judge, an immigration judge, had said should not be deported? And they deported him anyways. And they admitted that it was a mistake. And the judge said, get him back here. What did the court do there as well? Said, you don't have to worry about that deadline. When we are talking about the disappearing of human beings, there is no more potent of an application of this idea that justice delayed is justice denied. The deprivation of liberty is the most serious infraction, limitation upon individual liberty and freedoms that a government can undertake. Justice delayed is justice denied, and this Supreme Court, bought and paid for by the Harlan Crows of this world, corrupt, has said that they will deny justice. Just as a technical point, I'll just say this. I think the Supreme Court is utterly wrong. The Administrative Procedures Act was a completely reasonable way under which to proceed for this kind of case, which allowed for more collective relief, which would avoid this very disastrous outcome that I am describing to you this afternoon. Justice Sonia Sotomayor, in her dissent, again joined by Justices Elena Kagan, Ketanji Brown Jackson, and Amy Coney Barrett, said this: the decision to intervene in this litigation by those five corrupt men partisans is as inexplicable as it is dangerous. The implications of the government's position is that not only non-citizens, but also United States citizens could be taken off the streets, forced onto planes, and confined to foreign prisons with no opportunity for redress if judicial review is denied unlawfully before removal. History is no stranger to such lawless regimes, but this nation's system of laws is designed to prevent, not enable, their rise. We as a nation and a court of law should be better than this. Shouldn't we? I take your calls and your thoughts and comments when we return. My name is Maggie Dawn, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Democracy hangs in the brink. What do you want to do about it?
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
After all you put me through, you think I despise you. But in the end, I want to thank you. 'Cause you made me that much stronger. Well, I thought I
knew you. We are stronger than this. We are better than this. And we deserve much, much better than this. Folks, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I've been sharing with you all my high-level analysis of what the Supreme Court has done in the last 24 hours as it relates to the right amongst all rights that is essential in a democracy. It is, in my opinion, maybe the most important of all rights. And that is the right to due process guaranteed to every person, regardless of citizenship, that stands on American soil by our Constitution. The Trump administration snatched people off of the streets, afforded them no hearing, put them on a plane, and have sent them to a foreign prison, one of the most brutal prisons on the planet Earth, including at least one man the administration admits should have never been snatched, should have never been put on that plane, should have never been flown to El Salvador, and should not be sitting in that prison today. And the Supreme Court of these United States said, meh, meh. Now, there is some good news. I don't want to be all doom and gloom. The Supreme Court was very clear and completely shut down what I've heard from conservative texters on the text lines. That non-citizens in the United States don't get any due process. No. Even the five conservative corrupt justices that are in the pockets of the billionaire class made it clear that you have to have due process. But they're like, let's figure out this other way. Got to do it habeas corpus. Oh, there's like 200, nearly 40 people that were denied this right and might be suffering irreparable harm, including a gay makeup artist from out east. I'm sure he's faring really well in the uber violent, super overcrowded hellhole that is this prison in El Salvador. I'm sure that's working out fine. It is sickening to me. And so I mention this in the context of these broader discussions that are happening about the Insurrection Act, about a third term, because the courts aren't getting it done, and the Supreme Court can be counted on for, well, nothing. Civic. Kurt from Madison, thanks for your patience. You're up next, sir.
Hi. I want to speak to this idea that he's going to declare martial law. So, I mean, those of us who serve in the military, we all pledge to the same set of rules of unlawful acts. Even if he does it, there's going to be lots of problems. You're going to have, you know, X percentage of the military that are, you know, are behind the scenes are going to be all gung-ho of it, but you're going to have a large portion that are not about it. So you're going to have a collapse in of the infrastructure of the military itself based on the command of martial law. Second is, given this country's propensity to own multiple weapons and incredible amounts of ammo, it would just unleash hell on its head.
Which, just so, let me hop in here, Kurt. Which itself could then become a secondary justification for invocation of the Insurrection Act. The dominoes falling here is what I get concerned about. I completely agree with you about your commentary. There are many, 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 many good, honorable people in the military that I know would not follow an unconstitutional order. Thank you so much, Kurt. Appreciate your time. Mark from Prairie du Sac, hello.
Hello. Yeah, it just seems to me that reading again through the Declaration of Independence, he is, with a little change in the verbiage, he is committing the same felonies against the people of the United States as King George of England did against the colonists. I mean, creating new officers, changing a little bit, new officers to go and eat off the sustenance of the people. I mean, that's what Doge is doing. I mean, all these little punks going in there and looting our information and getting paid for us by the taxpayers for jobs that were never appropriated by Congress. I mean, sending people overseas, that was an indictment against King George of England, you know, for pretended trouble. These people aren't even getting a trial and they're getting sent over there. The Supreme Court, there's total cowardice on the part of the Supreme Court to not say, should be cut and dried. I mean, the Fifth Amendment is absolutely clear that you are entitled to, no matter how heinous a crime a person commits, you're entitled to your day in court.
Well, and that's because people here are innocent until proven guilty. And that, I thought, was a principle that we all held very dear. I wanted to also debunk this talking point that I keep hearing about the order by a federal district court judge that the administration had to return the man from Maryland, I believe. Yeah, a federal district court can't order the government of El Salvador to do squat, but a federal judge can damn well order the president or Kristi Noem or anybody else in the U.S. government to do what they think is necessary to uphold the Constitution. We're going to have to leave it there. I'll be back tomorrow. We'll continue this discussion. It's one of the most important we've had in quite some time. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good afternoon. Tune in tomorrow. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together against tyranny.
Makes me that much smarter. Thanks for making me a fighter.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.